Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassami. Coming together on this new moon Upasta day. So this morning, the bhikkhus recited their precepts. I think the Siladhara recited theirs. The Samanas and Anagarikas recited theirs. And then this evening, the lay community bringing their precepts to mind. Something that came to mind for me this morning in the, when I sat with the bhikkhus in the Patimokkha, the sense of sort of good fortune to be with people who were inclining towards such a high level of virtue, who also, you know, give up a lot to live the life of a bhikkhu. And just yes, in the sense of bringing that to mind in terms of, well, you know, in that assembly of bhikkhus there's quite a bit of diversity in characters and nationalities and but in the sense of, you know, people gathering together to bring to mind the guidelines of virtue. And this is, you know, this sense of a common unification, you know, something that binds us together, our commitment towards living in a certain way with certain guidelines. And this is something good to bring to mind because, you know, in that assembly, you know, people have different, you say, different characters. Maybe the way they practice the teachings can be diverse. You know, some more like to study, some like to meditate, some like to work. So there's in that respect, there's diversity, but you know, the fact that all these people are giving up a lot to live in a certain way is something worthy of respect. And, you know, when I reflect like that, it brings in my mind a sense more of companionship and friendship with my fellow bhikkhus, where if I dwell on, if I tend to think my way of practice is better than yours is wrong, or, you know, if I tend to be critical of the way other people practice, then, of course, that quality of friendship and companionship tends to diminish. Remember in one of the incidents in the time of the Buddha was, you know, the study monks used to criticize the meditating monks. They used to say they just sit there like dumb hogs. And then the meditating monks would criticize the people who more recited and studied, having sort of been restless and having scattered minds. And the Buddha asked them to reflect differently. He said, well, one should think of, praise the meditating monks, because through their meditation they could realize the Nibbana element. In the same way, he said, the meditating monks should praise the study monks because their ability to analyze cause and conditions, they can offer a lot of good advice in how to steer things in skillful ways because of their understanding of causality and their contemplating it. So in this way of thinking promotes a sense of companionship and friendship, even though the sort of mode of practice differs. But the commitment to virtue was the same. And also just bringing to mind also like soon there'll be four new bhikkhus joining the Patimokkha. So after the ordinations tomorrow, who are entering on what is called the higher virtue, taking on a lot more precepts and guidelines in their spiritual practices. In this ceremony tomorrow, part of the reflection from the Rupajaya, the one who's ordaining them, was how the higher virtue leads to the higher samadhi, higher calm, leads to the higher wisdom. So when we take on, like the renunciant guidelines, taking away those things that tend to overstimulate and excite, and this is more conducive towards a more calm state of mind, and also by following virtuous guidelines, then we don't use our body and our speech in ways that just create a lot of suffering and confusion. So guiding our energies in skillful ways. And Lumpur Liam had the nice analogy of virtue is like when he saw the wood-burning stoves in a monastery, he said, well, virtue is like the wood-burning stoves that contains the fire and channels it into skillful ways. So we'll have a certain energy. But if, but by keeping our virtuous guidelines, it helps to channel that energy in skillful ways. But, it's not, the results of practice are generally not instantaneous. Something that Ajahn Amaril was reflecting on this morning from his visit to Thailand was this sense of how people more these days seem to get used to having instant gratification, because technology is providing so much in terms of, at the touch of a button you can get this information or download this and look at this and hear this. So this sort of instant gratification. So and the results also of being in that sort of mode of being is a very lack of patience when, people don't have opportunities to cultivate patience. So if we come into our Dharma practice expecting instant results and then we can get disappointed and give up. But, what the Buddha said, we can, when we take on the higher virtue and we spend more time in meditation and contemplating Dhamma, this is preparing the ground. Like, before we plant seeds, we would, plow the land, make sure the land's got nutriment in it, the land's got water, so then when we plant the seeds can grow. So our practice is preparing the land. But then the Buddha said, but we can't say how fast the crops will grow. We can't say, okay, crop, grow this much tomorrow, grow this much the day after. This is not really under our control. All we can do is prepare the ground. So, when we take on, these virtuous guidelines and these practices, we still have to experience challenges and difficult times. And it takes there's a quality of faith to keep going through some of the things that we have to deal with. Feelings of not getting anywhere, bored, fed up, just feeling like going through the motions. So we can have a variety of experience. And, especially if we are used to come from a life of a lot of stimulation, when that's taken away, the effect of that is boredom. Mental energy not being very good, feeling like we're dragging ourselves around. So, having routines and things we have to rise up to really does help us to bring, develop more good energy of mind, good energy of body. Rather than the tendency maybe to sink into dullness and boredom and these sort of moods. So it's not an easy ride. We have to face up to many obstacles. But the beauty of virtue is that you're not creating more. We're not doing or saying things, if we follow the guidelines of virtue, that are going to create more difficulties for us. So what we have to experience, you say, is just the karma of our past actions. So, of course, this is why the quality of patience is something highly recommended and talked about by the senior Ajahns. Another, thing that is asked, that we bring to mind in this ordination ceremony, is the theme of contentment. So, even if we have only the root of a tree to cultivate contentment for that, even if we just have to make robes from discarded bits of cloth and rag robes, be content with that. If we're not well and there's no medicines around, then to be content with fermented urine as a medicine. And then even if we have to just live on people, when we go out with our bowls, people just put the leftovers in our bowls, to be content with that. So this is the fact it's mentioned at the time when we become bhikkhus, it emphasizes the importance of bringing the theme of contentment constantly into our mind as we live the life. Now, in terms of the four requisites in this day and age, it's not like it was in the time of the Buddha. You know? Yep, the food, there's quite a selection of food. We have good cloth for our robes. And as Lumpo Samedo used to joke at previous ordinations, we have NHS if we're sick. And, you know, we have, not luxurious, but we have comfortable dwellings, heated in the winter, suitable for the physical comfort. But the irony is sometimes when things get too comfortable, the mind can tend to complain more. And this is sometimes the mood that can prevail, you know, expecting more and perfection, so they sort of the mind complain more. So this is why important to bring to mind the quality of contentment. Now, you know, not just around the four requisites, but being content to live with people who are virtuous. Being content and also a sense of appreciation for this opportunity to live a very skillful life supported by the generosity and the goodness of the lay community. And I also, for the lay community too, when they see how the monks and nuns live, hopefully they get some inspiration and it affects the way they relate to the material things of their life in terms of not getting caught up in greed for more. In the West, we're very well educated and we've read a lot, we're knowledgeable about many things. So another thing that can be a bit of an obstacle is our views about how things should be. How senior people should be, how junior people should be. How people should be practicing, how people shouldn't be practicing. And, to really come to just contentment with the way it is. And, the important thing is to do the practice in your own heart. If we're caught up in a lot of the critical faculty, this is not going to be something that is going to lead to a quality of peace and well-being. No, just to be content that the person's virtuous and not doing anything to harm me, intentionally anyway. Living with people with a high level of integrity, trustworthy. And this is very, fortunate. So the Buddha praised those samanas who could give up their own wanting things to be a certain way and their own desire for something to happen if their fellows in the holy life wanted something different. So giving up what I want to blend in what the general Sangha wants. So it's now different maybe from the mode of the world where everybody's trying to impose their will and power. Not much give and take sometimes. So to give up what I'm minded to do to fit in what my fellows in the spiritual life want to do. So this is the, you know, this is a very more deeper quality of renunciation. Because, you know, it's sometimes it's quite straightforward to give up an evening meal, but, you know, to give up a view can be a little more challenging. But it's not that we don't have to have views, it's just it's just clinging to them and thinking, I'm right and everybody else is wrong. And, you know, how that will affect the quality of our practice, of how we relate to others. So, you know, if we can have views, but if we don't cling to them, we can still, say, adapt, and, you know, some of our views maybe will change as we develop the practice, some of our way of seeing things. And that's another thing, if we cling to a fixed view, we don't allow something to unfold. We can get stuck. And that's why we chant in the Metta Sutta. It used to be false views, but it's gone back to fixed views. By not holding to fixed views, we chant now. Because of the limiting effect of fixing. So having a view but keeping a quality of open-heartedness, I find, is a better balance. And of course, in practice, there are many what we call Dharma doors, many ways, you know, one can practice. And, you know, one of the, you know, important aspects of our Buddhist practice is living with mindfulness. Is being present with the way things are, knowing the mind, knowing when there's defilements there, and not feeding them. And in this way, we can allow defilements to cease. So we are reminded of the saying that, you know, mindfulness is the path to the deathless, and heedlessness is the path to death. The mindful never die, but the heedful are as if already dead. Quite a powerful statement, but just really bringing to mind the importance in our practice of cultivating mindfulness. And with the quality of wisdom. Now, if we contemplate just like what does mindfulness mean? Well, one way that I like to bring to mind is mindfulness is just being with what you're doing. But are we in our daily practice just being with what we're doing? Are we thinking, I'd rather be doing something else? I'd rather be somewhere else? Are we doing things to quickly get it out of the way to get on to the next thing? So really, when I consider mindfulness, it's giving a quality of attention and skillfulness into what we're doing and doing it to the best of our ability. And it doesn't just mean sitting on a meditation cushion, but it's whatever we're doing, whether it's something that's just physical or something, you know, on a level of mind, working something out. But just doing just that. Being present with what we're doing. Now when we, like, just like we meditate, if we make the intention to try and just stay with the breath, then what we call hindrances come up, don't they? We get maybe bored, we don't think we're getting anywhere, we get doubt. All sorts of mind states come up when we start to just focus on the breath. But hopefully, we can cultivate mindfulness around these. If we just stay with our meditation object, how it helps us is begin to see what the mind's doing. We stay more present with it. We begin to understand the mind. Because, you know, for I think for most of us, we kind of sit down and absorb into our breath and become very calm and peaceful. But when we when we're mindful of the breath, then, you know, things come up. But if we're willing, you know, if we stay with the meditation object, it helps us to get a perspective on the things that come up. Now, you know, the same thing when we're doing some work. If we're doing some physical work, we try to be with what we're doing, but then hindrances come up. We get bored, we think we want to do something else, want to go and have a cup of tea. And all these sort of things come up. But if we stay with what we're doing, give current attention to what we're doing, then again, that's our meditation, knowing what the mind's doing, but we don't have to follow it, just staying with what we're doing. Now, you know, just practicing this way, as we do let go, what we might find is being to actually enjoy more simple things, simple activities. And, you know, this is, to me, is the qualities of a healthy mind that can actually enjoy doing simple things, like raking leaves or doing a bit of painting, just ordinary simple things, washing dishes. And, you know, what I experience is what promotes that quality of enjoyment is really the quality of putting current attention to what we're doing, not doing it to get it finished, not doing it to get on to the next thing, but really being with what we're doing. So in my youth, I used to like having to wash up when I was at home. But now when I go home, my father cooks the meals and I do the washing up. And if I remind myself to do washing up, not to get it out of the way quick, but just to do it, to do the washing up, I get it done just as quick and I enjoy it more because I'm just doing that. So I think it's good to have a more broader idea of what practice is. And, you know, I mean, we definitely see the preferences to see those things that are more pleasant as practice and those things that are unpleasant as not practice. But can we see it all as practice? And work through some of these different mind states that come up for us as we do what we do do. So the practice is, you know, developing the skill of letting go of defilements till the mind comes to a quality of well-being. And it's like, you know, the Buddha's analogy of, like, actually the mind can be like pure gold. It can be very, like pure gold is malleable, it's radiant, and you can do lots of nice things with it. You can, pure gold, you can mould into any shape. But when gold has impurities, it becomes dulled, it becomes brittle, it breaks. You can't use it in the same way. So we're starting off with, you know, gold with impurities. But as we practice with mindfulness, it's, you know, it's removing those impurities. And the more we do that, then the more we live in the present moment, the more we have a quality of well-being with what we do. And, you know, we're not limiting then so much the things we see as practice. So, you know, taking on the training is not an easy thing, because often we're asked to do things we don't particularly want to do. And maybe having to follow routines that we prefer not to sometimes, and resistance and aversion, different things can come up. But if we're willing to stay with it, to contemplate skillfully, to develop the skill of letting go, then, you know, then a quality of well-being and mindfulness and attentiveness into what we do begins to arise, and that's a beauty of the life. When we begin to experience that, you know, healthy quality of well-being. And, you know, and that, of course, promotes living wisely. So, as is said in the Patimokkha, from the higher virtue comes the higher mind, comes the higher wisdom. So these are the things that we go forth to cultivate, to to prepare the ground for the growth of this high wisdom. So I'd like to offer these thoughts for reflection this evening.